Number 34 in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is an answer to which question? Yeah, second question. Which is? Who remembers? Yeah, how do the energies of the Lord work? We find out, if you look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita purports to this, the first answer establishes the absolute truth, and the second answer to this question establishes the nature of the relative truth. So, that rounds it up. So first is that we find about the Lord in His forms, and now we find about the Lord's energy, particularly His material energy. How is material energy, what is His material energy? How does it work? So again, just read the Sanskrit Riteyartam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani ta vidyat atmano mayam yatha bhaso yatha tamaha. Now there are two translations of this. I'll start with the one from the Chaitanya Charitamrita because that's simpler translation. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of real light in the shadows, for in the light there are neither shadows nor reflection. Then in the Bhagavatam we get this: O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So now we're going to unpack, as we say in academics.
What is the verse in the
It's Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse number 54. Okay? So the first way they deal with this term, Ritertam. Artha, this word artha gets translated as value, but here he says as true without me. The word artha means value, purport, meaning, significance, all those kinds of things. It can also be called truth. What appears as truth without me, that's the way it's put in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Whatever appears as truth without me, something that appears to be true, but in separation from Krishna, independently of Krishna. Right? That's what we're talking about. Or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, whatever appears to be of value, but if it is without relation to me. So this is describing a vision of something as either true or valuable, independently of or without relation to Krishna. That's Maya. It is my illusion. The influence of my illusion makes that something appear that way. But he says, Krishna says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, nothing exists without me. Everything exists in relationship to me. You see it without relationship to me, then that's the influence of my illusory potency. On the Bhagavatam he says, if it appears to be a value without relation to me, actually it has no reality. In other words, that thing that appears valuable, although it has no relationship to me, or true, although it has no relationship to me, that doesn't exist. It's my illusory energy. So that's the first thing. And then the example is there. Yatha bhaso yatha tamaha. It is like a reflection of a real light in the shadows. For in the light there are neither shadows nor reflection. So we'll deal two parts with the first, the statement of what is Maya, and then the second part, what is the example, which seems to some people to cause more darkness than light. But it'll become clear, because the true light will be shown. on this. Okay. Now, if we look at the real basic state, well, actually we know the meaning of this verse already because we all know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We just don't know we know the meaning because Prabhupada has explained it. It simply says that everything, here now I'm reading from the first paragraph, text 34. Well, let's look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita first paragraph. Now we're going, Prabhupada says, the relative truth, which is called Maya or material nature, is explained here. Maya has no independent existence. One who is less intelligent is captivated by the wonderful activities of Maya, but he does not understand that behind these activities is the direction of the Supreme Lord. So he says, it's simply the energy of the Absolute. And here again, everything has its basic relation with the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the truth. Everything is related to Krishna. Right? And then Prabhupada says, now in the first paragraph of text 34, Bhagavatam, whenever there is forgetfulness of this prime relation with the Lord, and wherever things are accepted as real without being related to the Lord, that conception is called a product of the illusory energy of the Lord. Right? As soon as that conception arises, that there's something that's not related to Krishna, that's due to the illusory energy. Because nothing can exist without the Lord, it should be known that the illusory energy is also an energy of the Lord. So that forgetfulness, that ignorance, is also caused by Krishna. So it's Krishna's energy that causes someone to forget that something is Krishna's energy. That's what makes it a little confusing here. But that's what it's saying here. By means of Krishna's energy, we become deluded. So Krishna is saying, I'm situated in everyone's heart. From me becomes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So we forget Krishna by Krishna's power, his illusory potency. That's because of our desire to forget him. So he obliges. Right? So that's what happens here. So Prabhupada goes on in this paragraph, the right conclusion of dovetailing everything in relation with the Lord is called Yoga Maya, or the energy of union. And so the point is made early on in this purport, the right conception of dovetailing. You see, the two energies are functions of our behavior. You have this Maya, which also means energy. You have Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. Now really it's the same Maya. But the Yoga Maya is the right conception of dovetailing everything. And Yoga Maya and Mahamaya, he says here, or Daivi Maya, is the wrong conception of detaching a thing from its relationship with the Lord. But both the Mayas also have a connections with the Lord, because nothing can exist without being related to Him. This is called Daivi Maya. I guess who's Daivi? It's Durga. And Yoga Maya is Radharani. This is the internal potency, and this is the external potency. This arises when we become connected with Krishna, by utilizing the dovetailing, utilizing everything in Krishna's service. This, we fall into this when we utilize everything for sense gratification. So it's a simple difference of our attitude toward our senses and the sense objects in this world. Because when this vision of alienation or things separated from Krishna is a function of sense gratification, as soon as I say of anything, I am the enjoyer of this, then that thing I'm seeing is separate from Krishna. And therefore, that conception, Krishna disappears from view, the connection disappears from view. My conception is not Krishna-centric. Even if I believe in God, I can still be under the influence of Mahamaya, because what I've got is myself in the center as the enjoyer, and Krishna as somebody who's providing for me. I'm in the center, and Krishna orbits around me. When we come to Krishna consciousness, there is, if you'll forgive me, a Copernican revolution in consciousness. And Krishna is in the center, and I orbit around Krishna. And therefore, I have to see him as the enjoyer of everything. This is made very vivid by one comment Prabhupada made once when an Indian gentleman, I guess under Christian influence, said, "How can you worship a God who is an adulterer?" And Prabhupada said to him, "Krishna is not an adulterer. You are the adulterer. All women belong to God." So that's the difference, you see. Anybody, Yogamaya, me, all enjoyable things belong to Krishna. They're not for mine. But as soon as we get the mentality of being the enjoyer and expropriating things for ourselves, with Krishna in the middle, then this Mahamaya takes over. Now, it's really the same energy, because when we become devotees, the same energy which worked to cover us now works to uncover us or to relate with Krishna. Prabhupada says in a purport in Bhagavatam, he said, people want the vision, the pantheistic vision of seeing God in everything and everything in God, that relatedness. He said, to have that vision, you have to utilize everything in God's service. See, because that's Yogamaya. You can't go on and be using everything, you know, for sense gratification and then expect to see everything as divine. Of course, unless you think you're God. You know, you have that notion. So that's the difference. Okay? So here in this material world, this section of God's energy, this illusion is possible. It's possible to walk around and think, it all came into being, it happened by accident, it came out of chance. There, you know, it's really evident that Krishna is in the center. As soon as we have another idea, immediately in the material world, that's why the spiritual world is a nice place, because everybody who's a rascal is here, which makes it a little difficult to be here. The association is bad. Okay, so that's the difference between these two mayas. But this also is connected with Krishna. She moves as a shadow. So that connection is there. Now the connection is explained by virtue of this example. This yatha bhasa yatha tamaha. And the word I want to focus on here is abhasa, which comes up in another context too, you know, like nam abhasa. Abhasa, here it's translated as reflection. I'm going to give a slightly more generalized meaning. Indirect light, diffused light. You know, when you bounce light off of the ceiling, it's called diffused light. It can mean reflection, but it means like the projection, the remote extension or projection of light. You know, so indirect or diffused light. So abhasa means, so it can mean a reflection in our strict sense of, you know, bouncing off of a mirror or some reflective surface. But it also refers to twilight, where you can't see the sun, but the sun's light, the sun is blocked, but the light is over. So although that's what abhasa means, not the direct light, but the diffused light, or the reflected light from the sun. That's
That's the generalized meaning here of this word avatar. Maya, by the way, has two long ears.
Let's put them up there. Okay? So what he's saying here is, Prabhupada explains it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So there's two things here, avasa and tamaha, reflected light and darkness. So Prabhupada says the example is there's the sun, right? And then the sun creates two relative truths. One of them is darkness, and one of them is reflected light into the darkness. That's just the example. He says darkness is the absolute sun, is the absence of sunshine. So without the sunshine being there, you can't make a shadow. Right? So let's just say there's something here, and then there's a shadow that comes out in this way. But then there'll also be, within this area of shadow, there can be reflected light, or indirect light. The light that comes out of here and here, you see, will be visible. It'll be a kind of twilight. Generally, in most shadows, there's probably names for them. I don't know if you know them. Umbra. This is the umbra, the darkest, and this is the penumbra, you know, where the twilight is. The umbra and the penumbra. So there's a little light. Or if you want to use the example of reflection, there could be a reflected body, and then there'll be light projected into the darkness. So either way, you have this two things. So two things, you see, there's two relative truths. Reflection, avasa, and darkness, tamaha. Darkness is the absence of sunshine, so it's a relative truth. It depends upon the sunshine for its existence. And the reflection is a projection of sunlight into darkness. Neither of them, he says, has independent existence. Darkness comes into being when the sunshine is blocked. Now, okay. So, what happens in the state of Maya? Now, there's a couple of different purports here, but let me just find out where I want to go. Okay, then in paragraph 7, in the Bhagavatam purport, avasa is explained there too. Here it's explained as energy. He says fire, this is sort of in the middle of the paragraph on page 190 if you have the... we're supposed to number the paragraphs, right, so we can follow this together. Fire is possessed of heat, but heat is not fire. This simple thing is not understood by a man with a poor fund of knowledge who falsely claims that fire and heat are the same. This energy of the fire, namely heat, is explained here as reflection. So you see, that's why I'm saying it's indirect. So the heat that comes off of a fire is also avasa. And not directly fire. So that's what he means by avasa there. Now there's different explanations. Now, in the Bhagavatam purport, there's a direct gloss that avasa means para prakriti and tamaha means apara prakriti. Now with the two energies, the spiritual energy and the material energy. The material energy is tamaha, and the light that appears in there, the jivas, the conditioned jivas, are the avasa, reflected light. But then, now we know that this material world is made up of the confluence of two kinds of energies. One is earth, air, fire, water, apara prakriti. And then is the para-prakriti that are together. So Prabhupada says here in the purport in Bhagavatam that the avasa, the reflected light, reflection, refers to the jivas, the para-prakriti, and the tamaha refers to the apara-prakriti. But then he goes on and gives further meanings. So that just to be complete, I want to mention that's one aspect of this verse. This is called unpacking. You know, there's a lot packed in there. So that's one aspect. And it's true, you see. What happens is, why is this body valuable? Because the soul is within. As soon as the soul leaves, this body, which somebody I'm so much attracted to, immediately becomes repulsive. So it's that reflection in darkness which gives that thing the appearance of a value. But what happens here, so Prabhupada says here, now I'm going to go back to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So you've got this thing, you've got this condition where there's darkness and then there's reflected light somehow or other getting into that darkness, either leaking over the edges or being bounced back in. Right? Not very bright, but there's little glimmers here and there or something, right? But you can't see the sun. So Prabhupada says here, I'm in the third paragraph of text 54, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Whenever the material manifestation appears very wonderful, but whenever that is, this is due to a perverted reflection of the Supreme Sunshine, the Absolute Truth. Whatever one can see here has its substance in the Absolute. So that's where it comes. Whatever appears to be of value, so things in this world appear to be wonderful. They appear to be wonderful without any connection with Krishna, just interesting in and of themselves. Where does it get its value from? It gets it from Krishna. And it's a reflection of this, but it's displaced. It's a displaced value. We say that, but it's displaced. It's a displaced value. We say, that's why we say it's a perverted reflection. Because it's displaced. It actually has its substance. It's borrowed. Substance from the Lord, but it's become displaced in this way.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, I'll give some examples. I have a list here of examples. Take gold. That's something valuable, right? Species, they call it in economic terms. Gold. Why is gold valuable? They're rare elements. They're more useful elements. It's valuable because two things. Well, I'll tell you what, because it looks like spirit. Because it's radiant and it's immutable. It's the immutable metal. It doesn't tarnish, it doesn't rust, it lasts forever. Right? That's why gold, this is a little, you know, practical economic psychology. That's why people want it, because when they have a pocket full of gold, they feel, oh my God. Substance, you know. They say that anybody, any wealth, he's a man of substance. If you have wealth, you have more reality than somebody who's poor. Everybody knows that. They could call them people of substance, right? How did I get that? Anyway, that's why gold is valuable, because it's a reflection of Krishna. That's why people want it. So anything that you see that's valuable in this world, it's really because it's a reflection of what Krishna has. Wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge. You really want Krishna. But it's reflected here. And you chase after because you don't know that this is the source. You've got something else. You've pinned your hopes. You've formed your religion around something else. You've got a religion of money. Why do you want money? Because it buys you hope, immortality. Here's another value, self-preservation. Right, that basic, fundamental, instinctual drive. The problem, we want to protect ourselves. You know, therefore, we make all kinds of arrangements, take karate courses, you know, hire bodyguards, security systems, put armies in the field, because we want to protect ourselves. We're protecting ourselves because we have the idea, because we're in darkness. We've identified the self with the body. So this self-protecting instinct is dedicated to preserving the body. But the self is actually the soul. So it really comes from the soul. That is the real self. And that soul is really part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, who is the self of all selves, or the soul of all souls. So self-preservation is really love for Krishna. But we've made a mistake about who's in the center, because we're in Mahamaya, we're in the center, and that's what we have to preserve. But when there's actual realization of who the actual self is, who the real soul is, that we're simply part and parcel of Him, and that's who we have to preserve, well, then there's devotional service. So this self-preservation, this is explained by Prabhupada, by the way, in the beginning of the... That's not like the gold thing, which I learned in the psychology book. This is in the beginning of the transcendental teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. Prabhupada analyzes self-preservation as a perverted reflection or a manifestation of love of God. And what is lust? Where does lust come from? It's love of God. That's come in contact with the mode of passion and turned into lust. Instead of the desire to serve Krishna, it's the desire to enjoy. Prabhupada, there's an example here also. Illusory independence. Yeah, look at page 188, the fourth paragraph, a little short paragraph.
You call these examples about us, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something appears of value in itself. What its real value is that it derives from something that's in Krishna. But now it's dislocated into some other region.
You're saying that Abhasa means power of Prakriti.
Yeah, that's another. No, I don't think the two exactly fit together.
Yeah.
At least they're not, they're a little overlap, but not coincide. Yeah, but he says here, that's another purport. He mentions that also. Okay, look at 188, he says. He talks about it. Nothing has any existence without being dovetailed with the Supreme Lord. The independence of the individual living entity is not real independence, but is just the reflection of the real independence existing in the Supreme Being, the Lord. The false claim of supreme independence by the conditioned soul is illusion, and this conclusion is admitted in this verse. So there's another value, independence, freedom. Again, it's displaced. The illusory, he says, there's this illusory independence. The real independence is Krishna. And we have false independence when we take it on ourselves. We'd never have the independence not to be connected with Krishna, which means to say not to be controlled by Him. That freedom. We are stamped forever as the servants of Krishna. This is that's what it means by constitutional. You know, we will never, strike off our chains and rise. There's revolutionary rhetoric, we'll never overthrow God and take His place, because that's what we want. Well, all we get, you see, all we ever get is the choice of how we want to be controlled by Krishna. Either willingly, and we're controlled by the internal potency coming down through the disciplic succession, or else we're controlled unwillingly through the external potency coming down from, whoever. I happen to be dating or whatever. So one way or the other, I'm following the dictates, I'm following the order of Krishna, and I have to. I have no choice. That's my constitutional position. I'm connected with Krishna. As soon as I say I'm not connected, then I get controlled in this way by the illusory potency. But I am controlled. The only thing is, I can't see it. Even though I'm being dragged around by the modes of material nature, I can't see it. That's why I'm an illusion. You wonder why they're so wrong about everything. That they say, we're free, we can do whatever I want. And yet you see, everyone's dying, everybody's going gold. It's not for nothing. It's called Maya. They're actually wrong about their condition. They can't see what's in front of their faces. Yeah?
Still about when you see...
No, that'll be explained here. That'll be explained here. When you see the source, then you see directly. then you don't see abhasa. As Prabhupada says, in the sun, there's no abhasa and there's no darkness. It's directed there. So you're not, to see abhasa, you have to be here. Once you get out here, you're in the direct light. Now, there's another important point here, which is the point of connected and unconnected knowledge. It's a very, very interesting point that Prabhupada makes. If we look at page 188, paragraph 5. Now he's talking about what's it like to become dazzled. Become dazzled by the glaring reflection of the sun, moon, electricity, etc., and deny the existence of the Supreme Lord, putting forward theories and different speculations about the creation, maintenance, annihilation of everything material. So that's an example of somebody who's taken the reflection as being ultimately and finally important, as having the reality that really belongs to the source, but they don't know about the source. So, he says, these scientific studies of the cosmic manifestation or the bodily construction, independent of the Supreme Lord, are different reflective, intellectual, gymnastics only. But at the end, they are all illusion and nothing more. So then he goes on to say that everything that happens is now just a product of this illusion because it's disconnected. Unconnected knowledge. And then, page 191, last paragraph, he talks about the direct knowledge or connected knowledge. He said, the material universes are dark, and in them there are Brahmas and so on, born in that darkness, and they require factual light from the Lord to see him directly. Just as the sun can be seen only by the direct light of the sun. No lamp or man-made torchlight, however powerful it may be, can help one see the sun. The sun reveals itself. Therefore, the action of the different energies of the Lord, or the personality of Godhead himself, can be realized by the light manifested by the causeless mercy of the Lord. The impersonalists say that God cannot be seen. God can be seen by the light of God and not by man-made speculations. Here this light is specifically mentioned as vidyat, which is an order by the Lord to Brahma. Tad vidyat atmano. You must know that this is my personal maya, my personal energy. This direct order of the Lord is a manifestation of his internal energy. And this particular energy is the means of seeing the Lord face to face. Not only Brahma, but anyone who may be graced by the Lord to see such merciful, direct, internal energy can also realize the personality of Godhead without any mental speculation. So this is saying here, and now you see from, now we get the direct light, or connected knowledge, which is the internal potency that unites it with God. And it comes from Brahma through the disciplic succession. And if we receive it through the disciplic succession, Prabhupada is saying here, that is not indirect. That is direct. Direct connection with Krishna, direct vision of Krishna. It's not reflective. That's why the spiritual master is called transparent. You know, not translucent, not open, but transparent. Because it's face-to-face. So that's like Lord Brahma, here's this method of knowledge. You see, this is connected. Here's Krishna. There's the connection between Brahma and Krishna. There's Krishna. There's the connection with Krishna. And the knowledge is coming down in this way, under the order, vidyat. Know it, I'm telling you. So now you know it, receiving the order from Krishna and then being passed down. And so just as Lord Brahma can see Krishna face to face, so everyone who gets knowledge in this way, and through the internal potency, is also directly connected and therefore directly sees the sunshine. Right? That's this other point that's being made here, as we'll find out further in the next verse, report the next verse. Okay, any questions?
So, the process for that to happen must come in a more vivid.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Transcendent quality.
Yeah, the Yoga Maya potency, Gaivi Maya means goodness, passion, and ignorance. The other is actually transcendental, but it begins, has its start in the mode of goodness. And that's just the kind of launching platform out of the material modes into spiritual nature. That has to be a foundation in the mode of goodness. No knowledge develops whatsoever in the state of passion and ignorance, except, you know, how to eat, sleep, make, and defend, practical things, but not your knowledge.
Yeah, so let's comment on two things. The philosophy of the realm of the absolutes, where things are seen as the logical statement, the statement of philosophy, that as we find things here, there must be a perfect state of spiritual awareness in that realm of absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a prospect? It's not speculation, it's not directly seeing the Lord, but on the other hand, it's seeing things here in relation to
There's like just a speculative, like a Platonic theory or something like that.
It's speculation.
Mm-hmm.
He's not directly seeing, confirming the existence of God. But on the other hand, as far as the translation of the verse goes, he's not seeing it apart from his connection with God.
Yeah, he's seeing connection with God, so it's a kind of a borderline thing. Prabhupada calls that philosophical speculation. If actually there's the idea that things are connected with God, then it is philosophical speculation. So it has some actual value, but usually there's not so much practical realization that's connected with these things, and usually that speculation ends in some kind of Mayavada philosophy. Just like Plato, ultimately, couldn't come up with a personal idea of God. And when there's Mayavada philosophy, that tends to cut the energies of God away from him. That's the other example of a disconnected vision. In the Mayavada philosophy, their ultimate conclusion is that the material world that we see has no relation to the absolute truth. It just exists, it hovers around like a kind of illusion, like a ghost in the system you can't quite banish, can't quite exorcise. But there's no relationship, according to Mayavada philosophy, between the material world and the highest Brahman. So there's also a vision of unrelatedness. You can't get there from here. That's another aspect of abhasa. Of not seeing, I mean, of illusory energy of the Lord, not seeing the relatedness. But I'd say, you know, that as far as like other people's speculations, I don't know that is actually devoid of the connection, even historical connection, to some kind of specific succession or teaching being passed down. It's just gotten pretty scattered, you know, along the way.
Is this second? And it's somewhat related. The vision of someone who's pointing the way based on authority but doesn't have that direct perception.
Mm-hmm. What about his vision?
What was that of the two? Is it Yoga Maya Lama Maya or Abbas?
Oh, it's still Yoga Maya. Because one is just acting on the orders if someone has the vision, the direct vision, then and just does what that person says. Then he's as good as that person. This is why everybody was able in the first days of our movement to go out and preach Krishna consciousness. We just repeated what Srila Prabhupada said, and so the word got out to people. Or at least you can bring them to another stage further. You don't mislead them.
But so it's just, it's not that I'm disagreeing with you, it's carry the discussion further. If someone were to challenge, well, do you realize all these things that you seeing these truths that you're speaking? And the answer is no, but I know that they're true from my experience. So then, based on this verse, that person say, well, then this is just reflected.
No, well, because reflected means, if I'm basing these things on my spiritual master, then I'm in the internal potency. If all my acts are following the order of my spiritual master, then I'm situated in the internal potency.
Can we say that we know it? Being to the eyes of the spiritual master? In other words,
I know. And so there may be some time before I can directly confirm it all by my own experience. But one can say that I know it. I know enough. I've seen enough. More than you.
That's not considered a box.
No.
You're not seeing directly.
No.
Face to face. You're in the reflected.
You're seeing Krishna directly face to face. You look at that picture, that's Krishna. You're seeing him directly face to face. You just haven't really noticed yet. No, he never did. Well, every so often, you know, especially with reporters, he would say things. Have you seen the sun? Have you seen the moon? Those are his eyes. But you see, basically, they don't recognize because they don't see any connection. We see, we recognize. So it's a question of recognition. Everyone sees God. When they go see Radha Damodar, they see God. Some recognize, some don't recognize. Yeah.
I have a question about enjoyment. Is Krishna alone who extends himself and gives me information, but also when he becomes a constant? So is it...
What do you mean also when he expands himself as part of the constant?
So is it therefore that Krishna alone is the only enjoyer? Because Prabhupada says that real understanding means to know that we are nothing but Krishna.
Well, I think it's just simple to say that we're the servants. In other words, that when people who are part and parcel of Krishna, when they try to enjoy separately from Krishna, and they have the attitude, I am the enjoyer, they are not enjoying. It's a mistaken idea. And it's not that Krishna is relishing, you know, their enjoyment as they eat hamburgers. He relishes through his parts and parcels when they serve him. When they're trying to enjoy independent, Krishna does derive any happiness therefrom.
Yeah, he has his own happiness.
That's right. So he's not riding piggyback on the enjoyment of the fallen souls. I mean, that philosophy is there. This guy Charles Hartshorne God is the cosmic organism, and we are his cells to the cosmos. So he has this philosophy that when I put sugar on my tongue, first the cells in my tongue enjoy, and then it kind of gets passed up to me, who's at the top of the series. So his philosophy is that we serve God by having sense gratification. Because if we have sense gratification, then God enjoys it too, way up the line. That's not devotional service. So the thing...
That's also my time.
Okay,
so
good.
I want to say that when Krishna, you said yesterday and the day before, and Krishna is everything, also he's always aloof from everything. And also Krishna explained to Brahma that he extends, Krishna alone extends himself in different incarnations. And also in his body council. I think also Akura one time he said, Krishna,
yeah, I understand
you know, that. Like, you know, you are alone.
I understand the philosophy. Is there a question or is it?
No, I just want to be clear and know that. So the point is, Krishna is the only enjoyer. He is the only enjoyer.
That's
the
right.
Prabhupada said also, understanding means we are nothing. Krishna is everything.
Okay.
In this verse, and in your explanation of reflecting light, Abhasa, we don't discuss so much here the proposition of Mayavadi or Brahmananda existence. Does the idea of Abhasa, reflected light, indirect light, does it also have room for being the analogy of someone who is in Brahmananda? To clarify, at this point...
Yeah, but they're also in Maya. That's also a kind of reflected light. It would have to be, because it blocks Krishna.
But they don't perceive anything, any one thing as reality. In other words...
Well, they don't perceive at all, really, as far as I can understand.
So
there's no perceiver, there's no thing perceived, and there's no act of perception. That's the story.
Right, so what you were saying was, no matter where you are, either you're in the place where you perceive the sun by direct, by its revelation, or you perceive reality in a perversion, is one term, or in a...
Yeah, you see something that's not related to Krishna.
Right. But then, if you're Mayavadi, you start perceiving, so how does that fit?
Gee whiz, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it fits in at all, because I don't think it exists. I think it's another thing that, appears to be of value, but no, it's, not real. I just don't think that that state, is actually, I'm sure they can merge into something for some time, but that it's something that has... We know where they are. According to them, they have no location. But we know where they are. They're merged in Krishna's Brahma Jyoti for some time. They don't dissolve. They don't become God. So that's all illusion. That's a misinterpretation of whatever experience it is that they have.
Yeah. Let me talk about the different reflections. The above contain also the idea that between every individual and people there exists this reflection or frame of mind. So usually you recognize people identify themselves within a group according to some particular frame they have developed according to their experience of the environment, and they project this frame into other people. This is not light or it's not a darkness, or this, but it is that model on their mind frame reflected into the man.
Yeah.
Is this idea contained in the area of reflection?
No.
So what it is? What would you classify the area of it?
Funny.
No, I think it's pretty serious. I think that the social system basically works on this.
Yeah.
Identification.
Yeah.
So the reflection doesn't exist.
Well, what it is here, what the reflection is here, is when you take something as ultimately valuable, but something that has no relationship to God. So it's an idol, something false that you worship. Everybody's got some religion that they're following. And usually they're following, sort of bowing down before, the almighty dollar, as we say in America, or bowing down before this, or bowing down before that. They're figuring some way that they can make themselves supreme. They have some little God project. So some of this, social imposition is part of people's God project. I am the master and everybody else is scus.
Well, then you call that as Maya.
Yeah.
And then another personal view. What about the values? They do not exist or are not created through the process of this creation. And you can perceive them. Are they Maya, or if you can perceive them, if you understand them, you may be able to engage them in the service. But they don't really are containing the natural process of this sequence of creation, they externally, beside that. They are that sort of areas of alteration.
I can't follow all of that. If I answer your question, I don't know if it'll be your question, something else.
Like, they are things, they don't belong to our lives somehow. They don't belong to our natural, healthy, daily life, but still, we can come up with them.
mainly one thing.
It's on pudding.
Just an idea, huh? Okay.
So, sometimes most people you can engage in things maybe in service. How? Explain. No, it will let you study different philosophers. You have to understand them, so you have to somehow absorb their state of mind to explain them their conditions.
Yeah, that's
then
true.
You have to understand their pudding.
Yeah, okay.
To explain that. So that means, is that a condition of Maya or is it service?
It depends. If you're following the order of your spiritual master or not, when you do it.
So then,
you got out of that one, didn't I?
You're putting it on your face.
Anything else?
So, am I correct in understanding that two relative truths, Abhasa and Kamaha, are both under the heading of Mahamaya?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This position, well, you mentioned Plato, but then it brought to mind the Prabhupada discussion with Tyagiva. Through speculation.
Well, the next birth, maybe you'll run into somebody. After many, many births, it's much more difficult. They actually become white, they surrender. So sooner or later, one has to.
How to describe that, I think, somewhere in the devotional service, if one is actually giving
Yeah, if that's an actual search for God, then there's some devotional credit there. Sure.
When you were in Lansing, spoke at the Metaphysical Church, now they firmly believe and follow this person who is channeling this information. What is that?
You mean who are they talking to?
Yeah, and how would you suggest our next step include, or you know, how are we going to preach to these people? Because I'm sure they're going to ask us to come back.
Well, I don't know. I'll talk to you about that later. We don't have to keep everybody out. As far as who they're talking to, it could be all kinds of things. And people, or anywhere, you know. That's hard to know. Maybe we can talk about the rest of it now, because we've run out of time, I think. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.